During Robert Brogdon's Olathe Buick GMC clearance event, save up to 20% on new models like the 2023 Buick Encore GX or GMC Sierra 1500. View their huge inventory at robertbrogdon.com and find your perfect match.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Right now, we are joined by Sam Mellinger from the Kansas City Star. Hello, Sam. How are you?
Fantastic. How are you guys?
I was better when you gave me a hug at Mizzou Arena.
That was the highlight of my weekend.
Of everybody. Right in their face.
Yes, sir.
So, did you eat tacos before the game in the media meal?
I had two of them.
When you say tacos, was it a taco bar? Like, what was it?
Tortillas, ground beef. Right. Tortillas, ground beef, lettuce, tomato, little taco bar.
Let's talk
taco bar, sure.
I love taco bar, man. Right. That's awesome. That's a great pregame
Very delicious.
Press meal.
Very happy.
The picture that you guys sent out, the three of you together, was almost
very happy.
Uncomfortable how happy the three of you all looked. I've never seen Gabe Yarman look happy before.
That's on you. If that makes you uncomfortable, seeing three men happy like that.
I loved it.
I feel like of the three, the one that was the least happy was Gabe.
Well, but still, the fact that
we had to encourage him
happy at all.
You kind of had to squeeze him and get
in
here.
Come here. All right, come here.
I don't want to.
But it was it was a fun atmosphere. Everyone was already fired up from the dedication of the statue to Norm Stewart at Mizzou Arena. So there was a whole bunch of his former players. They were there, including Doug Smith and Derek Chivas and Melvin Booker.
Javon Crudup was on that. Crudup stuck out to me.
That's right. And so I had to decline the post game invitation to a couple of spots. Had the boys with me, so we went back to Kansas City. But I saw some video of a very celebratory scene at a couple of bars afterwards. Of people fired up, some ex players all getting together in the same under one roof was interesting, but. Even I talked to JT Tiller, our man JT Tiller, and congratulations to JT Tiller, who is the father of a beautiful 7-month-old baby.
You mean
and,
a guy like a JT
right.
Tiller?
He had brought his family up from Georgia. He called me when he was driving up to Columbia. I didn't get a chance to see him, but he went to the game. And so it was all this emotion. And so Nate asked me if people, considering how much tickets were and everything else, if they were disappointed that Michael Porter Jr. didn't play. And, of course, everybody wished they could have seen Michael Porter Jr. play more than a minute and 40 seconds, us included. But it's difficult to grasp it if you're not a Missouri fan and didn't suffer through these last 3 years of horrible, horrible, horrible basketball where the team just became irrelevant. And so it was dead. And I talked about these teams they lost to at home. Last year, not year one of the Commanders era, last year they lost to North Carolina Central and Eastern Illinois and Lipscomb. And so to have this team have any type of expectations, and then to see them, even though it was not Michael Porter Jr., dominate Iowa State from beginning to end, and then I know some people were tweeting at me, Iowa State's not very good, this isn't a good win, blah, blah, blah. They lost to North Carolina Central and Lipscomb and Eastern Illinois last year at Mizzou Arena, and for them to go out there without Michael Porter Jr., when some people have said, oh, this is a one-man team, he'll leave and they'll be right back to where they were, that was unbelievably exciting. And as long as MPJ is not hurt seriously, which we don't think he is, I don't see how you couldn't have a smile on your face. It was incredible to watch. And for some people, I saw even Connell came in and said, he saw one line that had Iowa State favored by one. So if I had told you, hey, Michael Porter Jr. is not going to play and they're still going to dominate him, how could you not be excited about that if you're a Missouri fan? How could you not be happy with that?
God, I didn't realize that the Iowa State was favored in some places. So I think there's two separate ways to look at it, right? Like from a pure like entertainment standpoint, it was a bummer that Porter didn't play.
Yeah, the reason I asked that question was because, you know, our guy, they got Michael Porter Jr. Right, no, I'm getting tickets.
A lot of people have asked. It's a good question.
From a pure, like, just, you know, basketball point of view, from a Mizzou fan point of view, again, with the caveat, assuming that Michael Porter Jr. is healthy and will play either tonight or what's their next game, Thursday?
Thursday at Utah.
Assuming that this isn't anything that bothers him going forward, it's even more encouraging. The way that game played out, especially Jeremiah Tillman, looks like a monster. So the thing was, like, he was supposed to be so raw, right? He was supposed to be really raw.
Yes.
Guys who are that raw don't have footwork like that. They're not able to move around the basket like that efficiently.
But
that,
to be fair, the first we saw of him was the KU-Missouri thing, and he had like 7 fouls in 6 minutes or whatever. And that's where I thought, well, that guy looks like a badass, but they're going to have to figure out how to keep him on the court. You know?
No, but it was portrayed that his offensive skills were raw. Mm. Around the basket, his post moves were raw,
and that still may be true. Like, can you score with a guy between you and the basket? You know, a fake one way, a baby hook the other.
But he's shown more than anyone could have anticipated in one game in an exhibition game.
I feel like if you have Michael Porter Jr., if he's as skilled and polished of a scorer as everyone who's ever watched him says he is, I want Jeremiah Tillman to be the go be the enforcer that gets every rebound and pushes people around and is the aggressor that gets trash points and stuff like that. He doesn't have to be that skilled of an offensive player to really help the team, does he?
No. I mean, there's a lot of and he did a few of these the other night. You know, set a screen, spin off, alley-oop. You know, I think he'll get a lot of buckets like that. He'll get a lot of put-back buckets. He'll get a lot of buckets. This is something that Konzo Martin talked about after the game, of just being faster than the 6'10" guy that has to guard him. Like, there's nobody. He's going to be able to outrun 95% of the guys that are guarding him.
He can move, and I liked hearing him speak after the game. He was I liked his attitude.
Yeah,
it was fun to listen to him talk about his emotions. He said that after 2 minutes, he was so hyped up that he was hyperventilating and he couldn't breathe, and he wanted to come out of the game because he was so excited and he couldn't. I mean, and you think about that, and you think, yeah, this is a kid that was just playing in high school last year, and now all of a sudden this is where he is, and look at this atmosphere and drama and everything else. That was funny to listen to.
Yeah, the other thing, too, I kept thinking about, we all, with Porter, it's about his scoring, right? Kevin Durant comparisons, all this stuff. I keep thinking, too, he's going to play some three, and at 6'10", like, that is going to be an incredible rebounding team. Or, you know, at least it should be. It has the potential to be, especially on the offensive end. They're going to get a lot of buckets. If guys take a three-pointer that maybe they shouldn't take, you might get a point, you know, on average. You might get, like, a point or a half a point out of that just from an offensive rebound and a putback. Like, they're going to get a lot of buckets like that. Now, all that said, Iowa State is bad. Like, you know, they are. This isn't the last time they're going to get blown out. So I don't know what the expectation, what the fair standard is. They sure as hell look like a top 25 team. Like, without question, they sure as hell look like the kind of team. Think about this: if Michael Porter Jr. did not exist, if he just did not exist, and that was the team on Friday, you'd think that was a tournament team, wouldn't you?
Be very excited, yeah.
And now you're adding. I don't know if he's the best player in the country, but you know, the presumed number one pick, Miles Bridges, whatever. You know, a top three pick, we can say. You add that. I mean, that's a team nobody wants to play. That's a Final Four contender, right? That's a second weekend of the NCAA tournament kind of team.
I hope they play West Virginia in that preseason tournament because I wish they just had a couple more tests on the schedule just so that we could have a better barometer before. You know, because I feel like we're going to really have to wait until SEC play to know how good they are. Obviously, I don't think anybody disputes like what you said, Stephen. They're clearly way better than they were last year. We already know that. But the question is, like you said, like, are they top 25 good? Are they, you know, are they top 2-3 in the SEC good? And I think we're just going to have to wait to see because they just don't have very many tests on the schedule, which isn't – that's not Konzo's fault, I wouldn't think. I mean, I would think that most of the schedule had been set, you know, way.
That was a man scheduling some games to keep his job.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
But they also – it's a new team with a lot of new faces and a new coach. They need to come together and build confidence and get wins under their belt. Like you said, they could end up in that holiday tournament. I think it's the AdvoCare tournament. End up playing Long Beach State and then the winner of St. John's and Oregon State in the second round. And then I think West Virginia's got an easy path to the championship game. So that would be a nice test to go up against Bob Huggins in West Virginia. Now they got the Illinois game, which is always a terrific game. But I'm fine with it. I don't need to know anything about them until SEC. I need to see them stay healthy and gain confidence and play well. I'm not, cool
I mean, like I said, and I don't think it's Konzo Martin's fault. Like you said, I think this schedule was was a Kim Anderson put together schedule to try to, you know, I don't think it would be smart for them to have a whole bunch of tough tests. I just like maybe one or two games where you say, okay, and if they do play West Virginia, that's a great barometer. By the way, West Virginia got smoked by Texas A&M this weekend, which that's the team that's supposed to be second place in the Big 12. So
and I don't know what Utah is, but it's a road game at Utah. The first week of the season.
They got a decent
program. You know what? They went 11-7 in the Pac-12. They finished in the top four in the Pac-12 last year. So that could be
a good game.
Yeah, they won 20 games last year. I don't know who they got back, but that could be a good test.
One other thing that we saw in that game on Friday, Tillman was the number one thing that stood out. Kevin Puryear was great. He looks like in such better condition and just like a better player. It's amazing what happens when you get some talent around him. Jordan Barnett was great. Defensively, maybe Iowa State is just trash offensively. I don't know. But defensively, there were a lot of contested. It seemed like everything was contested. No paths to the basket. And one thing that I do think that will last, just because I trust Konzo to coach defense.
That
guy can absolutely coach him some defense. And so that's a thing, too. I mean, the focus is going to be on Porter, Tillman, like these guys. But defensively, they're going to get through some games. They're going to win a few games that maybe they shouldn't, I think, just because they'll defend like that.
And again, look, Michael Porter Jr. is the headliner. There's no doubt about that, okay? But for people that are wondering, you know, can Konzo Martin have can he have success and can he sustain it at Mizzou? Besides, obviously, Michael Porter Jr., the biggest storyline right now is Jeremiah Tillman from East St. Louis, a kid that would not have considered Missouri without Konzo Martin, decommits from Illinois, goes to Missouri, and hopefully he'll be successful. Torrance Watson, a four-star shooting guard in next year's class, St. Louis kid, that wouldn't have considered Missouri without Konzo Martin, decommits from Ohio State, and is going to Missouri. We've seen enough talent come out of St. Louis. If you have that pipeline open, that is a game changer. That is what Mizzou basketball has been waiting for. A guy who could get those players, not all of them, just some of them, to come to Missouri instead of turning their nose up at Missouri. Mm-hmm. And he's already got two.
Yeah.
That's a big deal.
And over the years, like, how many guys have been in the state of Missouri, like really good players, and they've gone somewhere else to play? And if you think about how different the Missouri program over the last decade or whatever would have been if, you know, some of these guys, could have stayed in state. And it's
Bradley Beal, Otto Porter, I mean, David Lee, you go up and down the list.
I mean, Hansborough was never going to stay in Missouri. But, I mean, there's been a lot of talent from the state.
Oh, he was going to go to Missouri.
Since Norm, I mean, this is just an objective fact, more an opinion, right? Like, this is the coach best positioned to keep those kids. Anybody else they've had, at least since Norm.
And even Norm didn't do great in St. Louis, right? He did well in the rest of the state of Missouri, but if I remember correctly, I don't think he did great.
There's always been issues, but now you're already talking about Tillman, kid's going to see that, and this Torrance Watson kid, a four-star kid that offers from, Iowa State, K-State. He was committed to Ohio State, Texas A&M, West Virginia, all these schools. He's coming to Mizzou. And like, even a kid like, we're giving you all these stars, like Xavier Sneed from K-State.
Mm-hmm.
Love to have him in Missouri.
I like that guy.
I think he's an excellent player. Yep. Love to see him at Mizzou. I like to watch him at K-State.
Yep.
Konzo, if Konzo wants him, he's not letting guys like that get out of the state anymore. And that's a big, big deal.
Absolutely.
We've got Sam Mellinger in studio back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol and Sports Radio 810 WHB. We'll talk a little college football. We're going to talk some Royals baseball and then finish off with some Chiefs. Also in Columbia over the weekend, Sam Mellinger, by the way, Mizzou back in action tonight against Wagner on ESPN2 in basketball. But Mizzou beat Tennessee 50-17, and Butch Jones was fired for his efforts. Mizzou has won four in a row. They're 5-5 now. Drew Lock had four touchdown passes, and now he leads the nation with 35 touchdown passes, four away from the team record held by Chase Daniel Ish Witter ran for 216 yards. Larry Roundtree ran for 155 yards. The team ran for 433. The defense looks better. Tennessee scored 17. Seven of that was on a pick six by Drew Locke. But now they play at Vandy and at Arkansas. They are 7.5-point favorites against Vanderbilt. This has been an unexpected, to say the least, turnaround for Barry Odom and the Missouri Tigers.
Yes, two things. First, it's nice to see Butch Jones get fired and the John Gruden rumors start already.
That's like, right. I brought that up earlier.
I mean, you could be in a, like, go away and be, like, live in a cave. You'd be frozen and you'd be unfrozen in 20 years and there'd still be John Gruden rumors for every open job. It's great. It's good to see. So I think what we saw with, you know, when they were 1-5, right?
Mm-hmm.
You looked at the schedule. You couldn't help but look at the schedule and see that there's an opportunity to do what they're doing, right? But I think what you didn't know is whether that team that went 1-5 could take advantage of that opportunity. And to me, the thing that sticks out the most about what they've done is, you know, it's not Locke. It's not Witter. It's more of a collective. That Purdue game, I thought they quit.
They did. And they would beat South Carolina, and they would beat Purdue now.
And so for a team to appear to have, and just so blatantly, you know, they were down, was it 28-3 or whatever it was at halftime? And they were just getting
it was terrible,
blown out. And then, okay, so you come out of halftime, and you think, have some pride, you know, like show up one time, and Purdue just marches down, touchdown. I mean, that was, and for the third game of the season, too, it was a jaw-dropping, like, oh, my God. Like,
and they had fired the defensive coordinator?
Yes, yes, yes. There was all that, too. So that's only the third game of the season. You're only 1-2 then. You lose three more. And, you know, if something happened between those games, you know, like, you know, Barry Odom saved himself, right? Like, I mean, that was as close to a team just absolutely 100% quitting as I can think of right now. And so I think it's a pretty strong move to be able to show that you can pull a team together and that they're not going to quit and you're going to stick together and take advantage of a schedule open up a little bit. Like that's the most impressive part to me.
And look, there was so the separation for me was after the Auburn game, that speech, the turnaround speech, mm-hmm. where he kind of lost it in the postgame speech, right? And we all wondered, boy, has he lost it? Has he lost the team? Because even though they didn't start winning yet, that's the line of separation because they were embarrassed by Purdue and Auburn. They had a bye week after that. So they had 2 weeks to sit on that. And when they came back, they lost, but they lost 40-34 at Kentucky, had the ball inside the 25 with a chance to win, and it was a totally different performance. And then they went to Georgia, and it was a good game until the third quarter. And then after that, they haven't lost. So right away, because we found out, and I remember we talked about this, we'll see what happens at Kentucky. Has the team quit? He's got 2 weeks mm-hmm. to get them ready. Mm-hmm. And they responded. And they haven't been bad since then.
Yeah.
And so that's whatever happened in those 2 weeks. And so I know a couple of the broadcast crews have told the story on the air. That he took a whole bunch of press clippings and put them in a big barrel or cooler and set them on fire in front of the team. And so we're starting the season over and went crazy. And all the team went crazy. And then also, for whatever reason, Demetrius Mason, the wide receiver, was kicked off the team. Emmanuel Hall becomes a starter, and he's, like, become one of the best big play threats in football. So there's, like, a number of different things. But whatever happened in that bye week, mm-hmm. that's before and after. Two different teams.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he could have lost him going into that game against Kentucky.
And again, I think it's a critical point because there were a lot of us kind of questioning whether Barry Odom had any of this in him at that point. You know, is he going to lose? I mean, should he be fired? Like, that was a thing that people were absolutely talking about in October. That last month, people were talking about, should he be fired? Is he up for this job? Can he be not just a Division I coach, but a Division I coach at a big program in the best league in the country. That was absolutely a thing, and I think it's come back resounding.
Okay, I wanted to ask, so they play at Vandy, 7.5-point favorites. They win. They could become bowl eligible and likely play in the Liberty Bowl against a Big 12 school. That would be fun. We talked about Butch Jones getting fired.
Yeah.
And so then we talked about, and we got all kind of got into an argument where there were so many different arguments going. I want to reestablish like what I think and what I was saying. Okay. And so again, I will say that I think Tennessee is just a little, it's a step behind Florida and Georgia in the SEC as far as program. You got to say that because when you look at the amount of talent in states, and it's not close, like, you know, Texas is number one, Florida's number two, California's number three, and then Georgia's number four. And then there's a huge drop off. Mm-hmm. And I looked at a study that basically, you know, four and five star prospects, whatever. I mean, that's it. Just said there's that four and then everyone else. And so I just think Georgia overall is a better program, and in Florida, I think Florida's better than Georgia, and Tennessee's right there. Okay, I think Tennessee fans, like most football fans, have a distorted view of what they are because of what they used to be, and yep. College football isn't the same. But then we talked about the Dan Mullen thing. If I was Dan Mullen, I would leave Mississippi State for Tennessee, because that was the other thing. So yeah. I agree with Jake on some stuff, and I agree with you. I would leave. Now, that said, Dan Mullen makes like $4.5 million and just signed a long-term deal, and so it ain't like he's sitting there crying poor. So I don't know. It depends on the guy. It depends on the person. But me, I would strongly consider it if they were willing to pay that much money. But then again, if they're not, and he likes Mississippi State, there's worse things in the world you could do than get paid $4.5 million. But I think I'd go to Tennessee if I was Dan Mullen. But it was just, and I'd just like to get your thoughts on the Tennessee job and the Florida job, because that's going to directly impact Barry Odom and his ability to be successful in the next coming years, because now they both have to start over.
Yeah, so this is interesting. All right, so
you're interested.
There are worse things in the world than to be happy where you're at. And so I don't know Dan Mullen's situation exactly, his relationship with his bosses, his relationship with the big donors, which, let's face it, are his bosses. On the surface, I would leave for the same money. From Mississippi State to Tennessee. And I say that with eyes wide open about how Tennessee may be a bad job now. And what I mean by that is Tennessee may be the SEC version of Nebraska.
Yep.
Like a place that used to be really good and still thinks it's really good. Thinks that Peyton Manning is walking through that door, you know, that kind of thing. And what you do at Mississippi State can be acceptable and worthy of a contract extension. If you do that same thing at Tennessee, they're going to run you out and start another round of John Gruden rumors. You know, like there's that.
That's exactly right.
So if you can have your eyes wide open and not just intellectually understand that that's the situation, but in your gut, in your soul, think that you're up for that, then I think you have to go. If you want to win a national championship, if you want to be, you know, nationally relevant, college football playoff, like that kind of thing, you go to Mississippi, you leave Mississippi State to go to Tennessee. But if you think those people are crazy, I don't want any part of that job, and maybe I'll wait until the Georgia job opens or Florida or something that because I do agree with you. I think those jobs are a little bit better. LSU, you know, something like that. Then I understand that as well.
A&M. Would go after him as well.
A&M, A&M's. I think A&M's probably a better job.
You would have to because of Tennessee. Texas.
Yeah,
absolutely.
For the record, I agree pretty much verbatim with what you said, Stephen. I mean, I think.
Nah, I'm going to change my mind now.
Yeah, I think Georgia and Tennessee is a little closer, maybe in terms of jobs, just because of the traditions. But I agree with you about the talent. I mean, the talent in state makes Georgia the better job. But yeah, I mean, like my analogy was Bill Self. When look, he could win a whole lot of games at Illinois. And they loved him there.
Yeah.
And he could get to the Elite Eight. Mm-hmm. But he decided that if he wanted to win a national championship, the path was much more realistic at a place like Kansas where the expectations are absurd.
Uh-huh.
You know, where you win the conference every year and people are disappointed in you. And, I mean, and Nebraska is a good analogy, too, because, I mean, they fired Frank Solich for winning 10 games every year.
Yeah.
You know, they fired Bo Pelini for winning 9 games every year. You know, and
that looks pretty good right now, I would think.
Yeah. And that's the part of it that people forget when they run off coaches sometimes is, you know,
because all these Tennessee fans were pissed off the last couple of years with 9 wins and winning bowl games. This isn't enough. This because that's why and I know it was a disaster this year, but they have wanted Butch Jones gone for winning 9 games and winning a bowl game. It can get worse. Just because you're Tennessee doesn't mean you can go 5-7. And then you'll see, well, I wish we had Butch Jones. Back after this on WHB. All right. Baseball, says Sam Mellinger. The Braves are expected to announce Alex Anthopoulos as their new GM.
Indeed. I read that.
So that's good. No Dayton Moore, huh?
Yeah. Well, I mean.
Who's the president?
Is this still John Hart?
Hold on.
I think, are you implying that they could still hire Dayton Moore
yes,
to be president?
That's the implication.
Alex Anthopoulos doesn't come from the same.
Came from the Blue Jays.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember where he was before that, though. I feel like, was he in the Indian system? I'm trying to remember where he came from, but I don't know that that's something Dayton Moore would be interested
in. Yeah, John Hart's still the president, right?
Though Mark Bowman is reporting he won't have the title, but Anthopoulos will also handle the president of baseball ops duties.
Hmm. So, there you go.
Dayton Moore going to oversee another rebuild here in Kansas City.
Wait a minute. Wait
or is
one
he?
Second. Okay.
Oh, just hold on. Hold on there, partner.
John Heyman.
Hey, man.
Who we really like because one time on the air, Nate referred to him as John Hyman.
That's not true.
Yeah, you did, too.
Not to his face.
Well, on the air, you said.
No, you said his name.
I wasn't sure. That was years ago.
But Heyman or Hyman?
You said it's not true. It is true. It did happen. Because Schwartz was like, Schwartz liked it more than anyone else. It's just funny. I'll explain later.
Okay.
The point is.
How was I supposed to know how you pronounce it?
Right. At the time, it was funny. I enjoyed it.
Still is funny.
He wrote this article about the Royals. And this is 20 hours ago from FanRag Sports Network. Royals will try hard to retain Hosmer and Moustakas. The Royals, who now seem less inclined to do a rebuild, are looking closely at potential returns for star infielders Eric Hosmer and Mike Moustakas, but appear to have all but given up hope of retaining star center fielder Lorenzo Cain. Kansas City has been thought to be weighing a real rebuilding job considering their long list of star free agents and the expected prices in this year's market, but at least for now seem more focused on doing what they can to keep some of their core together in a winter in which they have the potential to be decimated by free agency. It's long been known that Hosmer has topped their list of free agents they'd like to bring back, but it appears, too, they are seriously weighing re-signing Mike Moustakas as well, if possible. It goes on. The Royals owning Glass family seems to have come to the conclusion that the team can remain competitive and don't want to disappoint an enthusiastic fan base that has wildly supported the team during its recent heyday. Is this just all a bunch of caca from John Heyman?
Caca.
Do I not get my hopes up at all, sir? Does this give you any hope? Is there light at the end of the tunnel, or is that a damn train?
So, it's caca. Some of this is going to be like petty local response to
Do
national
it.
Guy.
I like it.
And I think that John Heyman does a really good job.
Oh, come on. You don't have to couch it. Just add Adam. Come on, Sam.
But, like, isn't this what we've been talking about all year? You know, I don't know what's new here. The plan, as detailed in KansasCity.com, has always been for the Royals to go after Eric Hosmer. Like, he is the centerpiece of everything that they're doing. And if they sign Eric Hosmer, they'll try and sign Mike Moustakas. If they don't sign Eric Hosmer, they're not going to sign Mike Moustakas. Lorenzo Cain, there's always different perspectives. You know, he words it as given up hope of retaining star center fielder Lorenzo Cain. I think in some ways Lorenzo Cain has given up hope of staying in Kansas City. I think, and this is 90%, this is me just kind of reading between the lines, but I think Lorenzo Cain, how do you phrase it, was disappointed that there hasn't been more of an effort, you know, more of a long-term, you know, long
feels slighted talks.
A little bit. Yeah, a little bit. You know, Kansas City is a really good situation for him. He lives in Oklahoma in the off season. It's a, you know, 5-hour drive. He can get home. That's where his wife is from. That's where his wife lives. You know, there's a lot of reason for him to like Kansas City. I think he's just been a little bit disappointed in that way. So
is he right to feel slighted?
Yeah, but I don't know.
No,
I think I understand where he's coming from, but and I think he understands this too, that it's a business. And from the Royals' point of view, I don't think it makes – if he's going to end up getting 5 years, $80 million, 4 years, $65 million, something like that.
That'd be crazy if someone gave him 5 years.
Then I just – the Royals shouldn't do that. And if he can get that money, then absolutely go get it. And if he can get 5 years, $80 million, and if he can get 5 years, $80 million and $1 somewhere else, he should get the extra dollar. He needs to get every freaking penny that he can. This is going to be his last chance to get a payday. It just doesn't make sense on either side, I think. But I do think that Lorenzo has been a little bit disappointed that there hasn't been more long-term talks with him. But look, if you're asking me is there a chance that Eric Hosmer and Mike Moustakas re-sign with the Royals? For sure, there's a chance. I don't think you want to bet on that chance. I think there's a much more. It's much more likely that both those guys will be gone.
To me, it comes down to what is David Glass willing to let this payroll get to? Because if he's willing to take this payroll close to $200 million,
put a number on it, Sammy.
You know,
I think David Glass. Probably looks at you guys. I just had two straight record payrolls, and we went 81 and 81 and 80 and 82. We had what was it? 100? I forget. I always forget what the payroll ended up being in 17. I think it was about 140.
Yeah,
in the 140s.
I believe that's right.
What do you think Dan Glass has to say about this?
Why you do that to me, Steve?
Nothing.
I think that David Glass kind of feels like, he just spent $140-some million on a 500 team.
What you have in Buddy, you have a guy that's just obsessed with losing.
Nope.
So I don't know why now he's going to think $180 million. You know, every time you talk to David Glass, every time that he ever speaks about payroll, the first thing he says is there's not a direct relation between, payroll and winning. We can argue.
But there could be a direct relationship between payroll and ticket sales.
Yeah, butts and seats.
That's the only calculation that he makes that makes this make sense. Because to me, if you sign Hosmer and Moustakas, those guys are getting long-term deals. The majority of those contracts then will be played out when they're past 30 years old. I don't think it's a prudent thing to do. I think it's time to reset and let them go.
That's going to affect the upcoming TV deal or the new TV deal.
So, this is frustrating for me, and it doesn't make sense, but I'm told by people on both sides that, believe it or not, what the team looks like in that offseason that they do the deal does not have that much of an impact on what the TV contract ends up being.
Do you believe that?
Yeah, because people on both sides are telling me that. And people with no reason to lie about it.
Everyone has a reason to lie.
Who are disappointed that's the fact are telling me that. I get it in some ways. I do, because you would rather, like, the macro theory is that you would rather have a smaller rating in a place that has 10 million people than a bigger rating in a place that has
economies of scale.
2 million. Like there's more room for growth. That's kind of the. You're buying households, and in Kansas City, there's only so many households that you can buy. So, but I understand where you're coming from about he'll care about the contract as it relates to ticket sales. But if Eric Hosmer is going to get 6 years, 145, 7 years, 160, something like that, are you going to sell $160 million?
That's my question.
Extra ticket sign? I don't think so at all. And I love Eric. I think he's a good player. I think on the scale of big money free agents, he's a pretty good bet. He's young. He's athletic. He has a set of skills that should age pretty well. I don't see it being the business move for a team that's always been about business.
They're going to sign Logan Morrison.
I think that's. A lot of Yonder Alonso, I think, might be your third baseman. I think they're going to go in that route of smaller salaries with guys. These reclamation projects. That turned out to be Mike Minor,
TJ Maxx,
also turned out to be Chris Medlin.
Morrison hit 38 home runs. I think he made $2.5 million. He said it would be a dream to play in Kansas City. Yeah. His grandmother lives here. He's born in KCMO.
That's what they've always done. The Royals have always, sometimes they get Chris Young with these reclamation projects, and sometimes they get Chris Young with these, what I mean?
Why, you sly son of a gun. I get it. Both were different.
Wow. That's why
you're the best.
He's the lead columnist of the Kansas City Star.
What are you going to work on this week?
I got a lot of stuff going on, guys. And one that I'll tell you off air, but I can't tell you right now because it's not going to come for a few weeks. I got some stuff going on.
By the way, did you do the tour of the NTC?
No, that was Vahe Gregorian and Sam McDowell.
Please tell Vahe I love that piece that you did on yesterday.
Please tell people what an NTC is.
The National Training Center.
Thank you.
For United States Soccer.
You ever tour the NWA?
Vahe did a huge piece on it in the Star yesterday that was really cool and in-depth.
And what Vahe wrote is terrific. Everybody should read it. But there was also a really cool video that went with it as well.
So. That's Sam Mellinger. You can read his work at the Kansas City Star. Thank you, Sam.
Thank you, guys.
We'll be right back after this with a very happy and upbeat Gabe DeArmond on PowerMizzou.com. He's very excited. Always. Nothing but smiles from Gabe DeArmond on Sports Radio 810 WHB.